two working groups. One is this W3C working group that has produced the PROV, which is a baseline, very generic provenance working provenance model. And the other one is associated with the Data One project, which is down here. It's an NSF project on data preservation that's been going on for about 4 years now, as a working group on provenance. And as part of that, we've been pushing the idea of promoting provenance for workflow in the context. Okay, so what we've done is essentially taken PROV as a baseline and build on top of that a very thin layer of extensions that accommodate the needs of workflow-based provenance, which is not covered by PROV. So everything is actually, that I'm going to describe, is going to be very, very easy, straightforward. But in a sense, that's a positive. That's a, like a manifestation of how PROV can be very easily extended to do something useful. The flip side of that is that, it's so easy that anyone can come up with their own extensions, which kind of defeats the whole purpose of a community effort, and it breaks the interoperability, which is the whole premise of the PROV model. So you want to be careful. So if you don't get anything else out of the talk, is basically this is the high-level message, okay? So the motivation is that there are queries of a provenance. When provenance is produced by workflows such as this one here, this is a VStrails workflow, in the area of climate change, and description of it is in the paper. I'm not going to spend any time on it. But we actually built an implementation and a demo for the NSF review at Data One based on these kind of workflows. These produce provenance, but you can't readily capture the provenance using just PROV on its own. I'll show what PROV can do. So the motivation is that if you want to ask questions on the provenance captured during the run of this workflow, then you have to have something slightly more expressive. So the first and the second questions are straightforward. They don't really require any linking to the structure of the workflow. But the third is more interesting. So for example, check that the provenance trace is conformed to the structure of the workflow. Alternatively, here's the provenance, and here's some partial description of the structure. Can you make some inferences that are consistent with the provenance about the structure of the workflow that produced it? Okay. Or alternatively, here the structure of the workflow, can you prove or disprove that this provenance actually came from represents a valid run for this workflow structure? Okay. So in terms of terminology, we use the terms prospective provenance to indicate the presentation of the representation of the workflow itself. And I think this comes originally from Juliana, who was here yesterday. I'm not sure I should credit others for this, just a terminology. Retrospective provenance is basically the data dependencies that are captured during the run. And there's also provenance of a process, which is out of scope here, but basically is the evolution of the workflow across versions. And you know, just for information, VStrails covers that as well. So I mentioned PROV. At a very high level, this is how it's structured. For those of you who are familiar with the W3C model, there's a recommendation track. So we have these shaded documents are part of the recommendation track. And the core of it is something called PROV-DM, or data model. Okay, which comes with the PROV N, which is a notation, which is an implementation neutral notation, which actually is suspiciously very close to relational. Okay, so it is, in fact, a relational notation, if you wish. Okay, and then there are other interesting things that we'll not talk about here. You can go around, and all the documents are online. Okay, so we look at PROV-DM and PROV-N, how they can be used to represent RPROV and PPROV. So the RPROV is really what you expect. This is like an example. It's the usual pattern, the use generation pattern with the data in between. Now these activities, these rectangles are activities. The activities in our case represent executions of workflow tasks. Okay, and the way we express this, the only thing that we have is that these ovals, okay, the ovals the round things are entities, which is basically anything you can express the provenance of. Okay, and you can say that this particular activity was associated with this entity, and this entity is typed. You can annotate it with a type. The type is plan. Okay, and when I say PROV type and PROV plan, these are predefined attributes and values that you can associate to things here, okay? So all you can say improv is that an activity was carried out potentially by someone, and actually in this case we don't say by whom, that would be an agent, okay? But this agent, whoever that is, maybe an interpreter, followed a recipe. So a recipe or plan is this. And that's all we have, okay? This is the corresponding syntax. This is the proven, which as I said, is in near relational modulus of normalization. And you have an entity T1, which is this, and you just annotate it to say this is of type plan, and this is your just P prov. And then you have syntax, which is self-explanatory, that for the rest. It was associated with this relation here, okay? So it's not much, but this is done deliberately, yes.
So I'm sorry for this question, but in the P-prod, you say you can have tasks, but
no data.
So if I have a task like
T1
that always takes a configuration data file, I can't represent that in my prospective model?
No, you would have to associate it to these. So if it actually is actual data instances, they would be associated to this, to the activity. So that's part of the extension is getting into in a second. This is a very short talk, so I'll skip many things. What we did is took a couple of reference data flow models. I see I only have time for one of them, which is most commonly. So a task comes with ports, output ports, and input ports, and the data dependencies basically are represented by links between the ports. Okay, and this is the case for a number of the commonly used systems. There's an alternative representation that uses processors and channels. It's a bipartite graph, but I don't think I have time to get into this. This is all covered in the paper as well. So if you're interested in data flow process networks, this is your model. Okay. So the way you extend it is simply by adding a few relations. And what you say is, okay, I manifest this pattern by say, in my pprov, my pprov, I express the fact that T1 has a port, which is called OP1, is an output port, T2 has an input port, and then I add a data link between this, okay? And then I can have structural information about the workflow and its component tasks, and then T1 is a task of, and T2 is a task of the same workflow, WF. So if you have, so to answer your question, I hope, if you have a configuration, then configuration goes into ports, so you can use the ports to basically bind to the configuration. And then what happens at execution time, so I'll skip the channel model, it's actually very similar, it's a similar principle, there's nothing really mysterious here. If you put it together, rprov and dprov and pprov, what you get is that this is what we had a minute ago, and now we have actual instances. So now a data is bound to a port, and we have a three-way relation, which is admissible in prov, that says basically I've seen D appear on an output port of P1 in the context of a particular execution, activity. And to the extent that these activities are actually associated with T1, which has an output port of P1, basically this pattern is what we want to ensure the consistency of. It's basically, I can either say, well, I have a data, I've seen it on a port, and because I know that the context activity where I saw it is a task, then this task better have that port, otherwise there's an inconsistency. I can also say, okay, because D, since I've seen D appear on output port of P1 and appear on input port IP1, then there's got to be a link between these. Okay, I can either have these asserted or inferred, I can sometimes detect inconsistency. I'll show an example in a minute. Okay, so what is important is now there's no pretense that all prov interpreters understand this extension, so you want to fall back into plain prov. And the simple way to do that is basically to lose the port information, and you have a simple rule, and this, all the rules are datalog style, and that says, well, forget about the port, which is in here. I map the witnessing of data appearing on a port simply as, okay, D was somehow generated by the activity, and I throw the port information away. and the similar, I replace this, or I see this on the import, and I assume that this means that the invocation has actually used this piece of data. Okay, so I can fall back very easily. Okay, with channel, again, never mind. There's one, a couple of more things that I wanted to say. There's a notion in Prof that is called the bundle, and the bundle is basically a way of grouping statements about provenance. And originally, the way the reason for this is that you can give a name to these bundles, and therefore they become an entity themselves, and that enables me to talk about provenance or provenance. Now I have an entity which contains provenance statements. Someone has produced that entity, and now I have provenance or provenance. So this is manifested here. So I call these statements bundle one in my own namespace, and this is syntactically how I do it in Proven. And then interestingly, I say, okay, there's an entity called bundle one, and now I give it a prof type, which is prof bundle. And again, anything prefixed by prof is built in. Okay, so what prof does is really gives you the hooks to do extensions. It doesn't do the extensions for you, and that's basically the exercise we're going through. It's a simple exercise, but it like shows how principal extensions can work. Okay, and then I say, well, the bundle one was really generated at a certain time, and is Bob actually responsible for it. The way we use this mechanism, we repurpose it a bit and say, okay, this is interesting to express the provenance of workflows that have a nested structure, for example. Okay, so I can say that there's an entity which is a trace of a whole run, which is now a bundle, and I can say that the whole trace was generated by a particular invocation of the of the workflow. Okay, so if I have a nested workflow, then the way I model it is I have an entity T which has multiple types, which I can do. This is all semantic web inherited principle. So you can have multiple types. Okay, and you can say, well, T is a task, but T is also a workflow. And then I have a bundle that is the provenance about the whole trace of the entire run, okay? But it also contains an activity, which is the activity correspond one invocation of this particular entity T. So here it says. And the entity, now I declare it as a bundle, and I can say that these new trace, with this new trace is actually generated by this activity. So by using this, I'm showing you patterns, really nothing more, to say that you can express the provenance of structurally nested workflow, or basically tasks that are themselves provenance aware. If you have an R script that collects provenance as it runs, then you can bundle it up and come up with a whole thing, okay? Now, I have very limited time for showing how you answer the queries, but I alluded to this already. There's a very simple rule that says, for example, if I see D on an output or an input port, that better be a data link, okay? And I may have a case where these, I already have an input port, a data dependency linking coming into IP1 of T2, which is actually not coming from the output port 1 of T1, so this is a constraint violation. I detected there's an inconsistency between my provenance trace and the structure of the workflow. I cannot have two incoming ports into incoming links into the same port. Okay. Fast forward. I just wanted to make one quick point. We're not the only group doing this, just because it's simple and useful. There are other groups that have been doing their own extensions. One of them is a group, the Rio group of Marta Mattoso. They have an extension that they use for their own purposes. There's a European project called Workflow Forever that does its own extension. If you have questions, I can answer specific questions. But the point is, these are all legitimate, but you shouldn't really diverge. So what we're doing in Data One is really try to bring everyone inside the tent and make a community effort, because the whole point of this is to guarantee interoperability. Okay, so I'm done. I'm going to leave this up and, you know, clever. And if you have any questions, thank you. Well, actually, I don't think there's, it's not the question. We're doing the thing afterwards. Okay, sorry, I forgot about that. Is that a burning question? Yeah. Oh, is that because you have to leave?
Really fast, I promise. So it looks like because, I mean, so this hits a lot of integral pieces, right? You can get a good specification of a large chunk of the way, but you're always going to have the next set out, right? So it seems like we should be following a core corona style model of data modeling.
What style model?
Core corona, right? So you've defined a good core here. What extensions have you built in so that other people can easily create coronas and still work with your system?
Well, we haven't extended our extensions, no. We have extended the core, and we need to see what is needed, what kind of extensions are actually needed. I mean, it should be driven by what queries people need.
Even better, what have you built into this so that the extensions are built, so that anybody can build an extension, but it still works well with this, right? So what hooks have you put in here so that people can easily extend?
That's a good question. I don't think there's deliberately any further hooks in addition to, but you can still use the prov hooks to extend this, I think. We should go through the exercise. All right, thanks.